All right, we are live here with a Schloss rant, part two of the NFL season preview. Sitting here Wednesday night, just under 24 hours until kickoff between the Lions and the Chiefs. I'm sure everyone's got their fantasy drafts all done. I'm sure that everyone has taken a look at the slate for week one. I'm sure that everyone is getting in all of their futures, all of their unders, their overs, conference winners, division winners. And I'm going to give that all to you in a second. But the interesting thing is here, as I went through breaking out my division winners, and even more so the teams that I think who will make the playoffs as a wild card in the AFC and the NFC, I realized that with some of the angles we looked at in part one, there was going to be some inconsistencies. Like, for example, I said to go ahead and take a look at the Patriots to make the playoffs, I think at like a plus 235 line. But for my predictions, I actually don't have the Patriots in the playoffs because there's another team I have to put in, the Ravens. The Ravens I almost didn't put in because I almost put the Chargers in. But I also said bet the Ravens to win exactly 11 games at plus 550. The point of this is that in the AFC, I mean, if you go through these divisions, in the AFC specifically, not the NFC, but the AFC, there are so many different teams that you could see making the playoffs. I mean, really, the only teams that you really can't make, like, any type of argument for making the playoffs would be, like, the Colts and the Texans and the Raiders, because really everyone else is a live team. Definitely all the teams in the AFC East. Definitely all the teams in the AFC North if Deshaun Watson is going to do his thing. Definitely the teams in the AFC West besides the Raiders. Chargers with Herbert. Maybe you think Russell Wilson bounces back. And, of course, Mahomes there with the Chiefs. So it's just – it's impossible. Really, like, truly is impossible to pick these playoff teams in – the AFC. But let's give them to you anyway. All right, so coming out of the AFC East, we're going to go with the Buffalo Bills. This has been their division the past few years. I think that that team, like I mentioned in the part one of the podcast, is not going to have as much to deal with in terms of DeMar Hamlin nearly passing away on the field and also a couple snowstorms that forced them to reroute some of their games. I believe their Thanksgiving Day game was impacted there as well. So I think a little less turbulence, hopefully, there on both of those fronts is going to put the Bills in the playoffs, winning the AFC East. And I actually have them as the number one seed. The North also sticking with the chalky pick, the Bengals. Joe Burrow appears to be fine. So no, nothing to worry about there. No one hurt. The South, I do like the Titans. So I'm sticking with what I said in the part one of the podcast with the different angles. I like in the West, of course, the Chiefs, yet again, another chalk. Now, when it comes to the wild card, sticking with what I said, the Browns making one of the wild cards. I have also the Ravens in there. I almost left them out. And the Broncos in there as well, another team I said who could you should look at to make the playoffs. I think they're sitting at around plus 180. All right, from the NFC. And again, when I give these picks, this is Schloss, the football observer, the analyst, someone who's looking at these numbers, crunching data, trying to find different angles from a truly like objective perspective, trying to find different, you know, ways that some of these teams are going to get the job done and make the playoffs. Later on, we're going to break down the Giants, the team that I love and I have loved since I was, you know, 2, 3 years old, whatever the case might be. And I'll speak about the Giants in definitely a different light because I don't have them making the playoffs for these official predictions. So let's go to the NFC East. I got the Eagles as the one seed. I know there hasn't been a repeat division winner since the early 2000s, which the Eagles did that, but I don't see the Cowboys winning the division. I think Philly's too strong. In the North, a surprise pick. I'm going with the Green Bay Packers. I think everyone's on the Lions probably. Some people are on the Vikings. I'm going to go with the Green Bay Packers, I think, with the easy enough schedule. And with Jordan Love, I think he's going to be able to get it done. The South, I'm going with the Falcons. This division is just an absolute hot mess. Someone's got to win it. I gave them out on the, you know, different angles. I said plus 200 for them to win the South. Let's stick with them there. And the West, I like the 49ers. All right, in the wild card, I think Dallas is too good to miss the playoffs. Seattle, who I had under 9.5 on part one, I'm actually going to put them in one of the wild cards. And the Vikings, I'm also going to put in there making the wild card. Despite everyone think there's going to be a significant regression with the Vikings, I think that this NFC is really wide open. I don't think that there's very much in terms of talent. I think there's the whole NFC South is an absolute dumpster fire. In the West, you have teams like the Rams and the Cardinals who probably are not slated for big things. In the North, you have a lot of uncertainty with the Bears. Can Justin Fields stay healthy? New quarterback in Green Bay, but again, someone's got to win it there. East is the solid division because even Washington can do some things. And the Giants made the playoffs. The Cowboys made the playoffs. Both those teams won a game. And the Eagles represented the NFC in the Super Bowl. All right, now the famous over-unders. I've been giving these out for years, even before they were long popular in the Schloss Rant NFL season prediction. But normally I go 3-3 or I go 2-2, meaning three overs, three unders. Last year we gave out six, and I think we were at 4-2 in terms of our record. But again, going three overs, three unders. We liked the Vikings last year over in that cast. We liked the Raiders under. I don't have it in front of me, but those were some of the angles we liked that we played last year, and those were two of the four winners. I mentioned the Vikings several times already. For the overs, let's do those first. The Vikings at over 8.5. Again, I talked about this in part one. This is a team that everyone's expecting a regression, but I still think they can win 9 games and get that over 8.5. The Cowboys over 9.5. I like them. And this next one is about as chalky as can be. Chiefs over 11.5. I think Andy Reid and Mahomes can win 12 games in their sleep. Even if Kelsey's out for a little bit, I still think Mahomes will find someone to throw the ball to. All right, 4-hour unders. We're going to go with the Panthers under 7.5, the Bears under 7.5, Seattle under 9.5, but in the playoffs. And this one pains me the most of anything that we're giving out here. The New York Football Giants under 7.5. I think the Giants, and we'll talk about this momentarily, I think that Dable did the best he can do last year, did a heck of a coaching job, but I think there's just naturally some regression when you get outscored and when you really haven't shown, or you didn't show last year especially, and really not in quite some time, that you can play with a top flight team. So again, that AFC is tricky. A lot of teams in the mix to make the playoffs, but we got to come up with a Super Bowl play here, and we're going to go with the 49ers from the NFC over the Buffalo Bills. So Buffalo finally gets over the hump, finally gets to a Super Bowl for the first time this millennium. But we have the 49ers defeating them, which is kind of a crazy thing to say because of everyone knowing what their quarterback situation is and how, you know, vulnerable essentially that they are with having Brock Purdy, Mr. 7-1 last year. And I know he lost in the playoffs, but I mean, he lost because he got knocked out of the game. And I think that that's really why I'm picking the Niners, because I think if they kept it close early in Philadelphia in that NFC championship game, and I think if they are given the chance to play the Eagles with a quarterback who's competent in there, like Purdy, not having to, you know, they had so many quarterbacks knocked out. I think Josh Johnson stepped into the game, and then eventually he got knocked out too. They had to figure it out between McCaffrey and Kyle Juszczyk, the fullback, who was going to line up under center and take snaps. So it was a hot mess. I mean, Eagles won that game going away, of course, but I don't think it was a fair fight because of all the damage they did to the 49ers QBs. I think that the success that Shanahan has had with Garoppolo making it to a Super Bowl, with Garoppolo making it to an NFC championship game, last year making it to another NFC championship game, he's shown you that he doesn't need the best quarterback. He needs someone who can manage the system. We know about the type of weapons they have. We know about the type of defensive players they have. So I think that if they're able to do it, even not so much relying on, you know, the top flight quarterback, it's going to change the way that teams look to build in the NFL. Because they've got stacked, you know, skill positions, even CJ McCaffrey, Deebo Samuel. They bring in Bosa's coming back. He came to an agreement. Fred Warner, Trent Williams, the offensive tackle. This team has elite players. It's just not necessarily at the quarterback position. And then on the playoff teams, to kind of circle back to that, we're giving you five new teams out of 14. The NFL stands for not for long. That's why we have a lot of teams out that were in last year, like, you know, the Giants for one, the Jaguars for another. So times are definitely changing. And I like overall giving out four unders to go with three overs. I think people, when they look at these things, the season win totals, they like to lean towards the over. I like to go the other way, just the pure contrarian in me. The Super Bowl pick is kind of chalky. I mean, I picked one of the pretty much universally accepted top three teams, the 49ers, the Eagles, the Cowboys from the NFC. And the AFC, you can really go anywhere. You got people picking the Jets. You got people picking, you know, even Miami. People picking the Chargers, who I don't even have in the playoffs. People picking the Bengals. You can really go any which direction. And I think that the Bills get it done. All right, now, a segment that's been going on for the past 3 years is the top five NFL players. And I like to start at number five. Number five, Andrew Thomas. Now, when the NFL players voted on the top 100 players in the league, no one voted, or Andrew Thomas did not appear in that top 100. A couple of years ago, I described Andrew Thomas as one of my favorite Billy Joel records, Turnstiles, because he let everyone right by. Not the case anymore. Listen, this guy let up three sacks in 17 games in 1,049 snaps and only committed two penalties. He's gone from an absolute liability to now the song that I think about him is MC Hammer's Can't Touch This, because he wakes up every single morning saying to defenses on game day, can't touch this, and that this is Daniel Jones. So Andrew Thomas in there at number five on the Schloss Ramp, top five NFL players. You can call me a Giants homer, but the production doesn't lie. The videotape doesn't lie. And him not being in the top 100 is an absolute joke. People don't want to give him credit because they don't think Jones is good. That's not his fault, your perception of Daniel Jones. But Andrew Thomas, the left tackle for the New York Football Giants, number five in my top five overall. Next, number four, Nick Bosa. This guy's got 34 sacks, six forced fumbles the past two seasons. He's dominant. There's a reason why they gave him $170 million today to end his holdout. And from what I understand, I'm not sure if this happened, but the fines can be waived because he was still on his rookie year. I struggled here. I knew I wanted to put a pass rusher. You've got guys like TJ Watt who you can throw in here. You've got even Micah Parsons I debated because I like his, you know, true ability to wreck the game with his speed. But I think I'm going Nick Bosa here. The combination of the power and speed, number four. This is not a guy I'd want to line up and block if I was an opposing offensive lineman. All right, number three. This guy is injured. You know, he's going to try to give it a go tomorrow night on the Chiefs. Tight end Travis Kelce. Listen, last year in that Super Bowl, if you look before the game, he was sitting somewhere minus 150, minus 155 to score a touchdown. That's unheard of for a tight end. I mean, you go look at his numbers, and I'm a big Rob Gronkowski fan. That's one of my favorite players of all time. I think he's one of the best tight ends of all time. Kelce's numbers, just they blow his away. And I understand Gronk could do a lot more from the blocking standpoint. I mean, Kelce really is a wide receiver in a tight end's body. Gronk could block anyone. Gronk was not a guy I'd want to go against if I was an opposing defensive lineman because I feel like Gronk always had the edge. But from a pure going out and going to catch the ball and creating mismatches and finding it hard for other teams to defend him, Travis Kelce is as good as a tight end from the receiving end as we've ever seen, if not the best all time. I heard them talking about this on First Take today. You can, you know, talk about Kellen Winslow, the dad, not the son. You can talk about Shannon Sharp. It doesn't matter. I think Kelce's better than all those guys, Antonio Gates, whoever it might be. Kelce's better than all those guys. All right, number two, Myles Garrett. I've talked about this guy on other podcasts, not just the NFL season preview. He's got three less sacks than total games since 2019, 54 sacks in 57 games. Look, this is just a guy who, when he puts his hand down in the dirt, I'm scared of him if I'm an opposing lineman. That's what this list is really about. Do I want to block this guy when he's at his best in the game? Is this a guy who's going to go in there and wreck the game? I'm very biased towards the pass rushers. I understand that. I don't love wide receivers so much. I don't love running backs so much because even the wide receivers, they're great. I think it still depends on having a quarterback where even if it's Justin Jefferson, you at least need a Kirk Cousins middle-level quarterback. But I think a guy like Myles Garrett or Nick Bosa, they line up and they're going to beat the guy that they're going against. They're going to split double teams. They're going to get their hands in there. They're going to bat away passes. And I think it doesn't matter really what else is around them. And I think Myles Garrett, again, this guy was number 20 in the top 100. I think that people don't like him because of that, you know, disgusting 2019 incident with him swinging his helmet at Mason Rudolph. Don't get it twisted. That was not right. That was not good sportsmanship. That was, you know, dangerous point blank. But this guy's dominant. Like I said, he puts his hand down in the dirt, and he's going to go after the quarterback, and he's going to try to get the ball free, and you can't block him. He's got the combination of not only size but also speed, and it's darn near impossible to block. And he can throw in that bull rushing method in there as well. And number one, I mean, Aaron Donald has been my number one the past 2 years. He's not on this list. I think, honestly, last year he really relished in winning the Super Bowl in 2021. So he's off my list. He didn't perform well enough to be on this list. It's got nothing to do with, his Hall of Fame candidacy or his career. But Patrick Mahomes has got to be number one, no doubt about it. I don't always like to put quarterbacks on this list. Like I said, I'm very partial to the pass rushers. I'm very partial to the guy who can wreck the game. But Patrick Mahomes just does just that from the offensive standpoint. I think he's already a top five quarterback in the history of the National Football League. I don't love putting the most obvious guy here, but he's too good. He can do it all from accuracy to creativity to mobility. There's no throw he can't make. There's no angle he can't make that throw from. He could be falling out of bounds. He could be going off that back foot. It doesn't matter. He's going to find the open receiver. You can take away his best receiver, you know, true split end in Tyreek Hill. He'll just go to Kelce more. If Kelce's going to be out for any stretch this season, he'll find Sky Moore. He'll throw the ball out of the backfield. He'll make more plays with his feet. This guy he's that good. I don't know if he's going to get to the 7 Super Bowls like Tom Brady, but he's got every bit the ability and more than Tom Brady could ever dream of, especially if you factor in the mobility. So Patrick Mahomes, number one, Myles Garrett, number two, Travis Kelce, number three, Nick Bosa, number four, and Andrew Thomas of the New York Football Giants, left tackle, number five. All right. Now, let's go on to the Giants. All right. Let's talk about the New York Football Giants. Listen, if we're going to sum up last season, and Daboll said this himself, I believe, in the press conference at the end of the year, it was a good start, okay? You go 9-7-1. You establish yourself as a credible coach. You win the AP NFL Coach of the Year, and you're working with an absolutely bare cupboard if you're Daboll. And Joe Shane did a good job being a professional GM, not taking on any more bad contracts, and really just doing the best to clean up the mess that Dave Gettleman left. And if you want to take a true, you know, introspective of this team, all right, the last time that they had made the playoffs was in 2016, with Ben McAdoo as the head coach in his first year, and they went 11-5. But he inherited Eli Manning, a two-time Super Bowl champion, coming off a year in which he threw 35 touchdowns and 14 interceptions and over 4,400 yards in 16 games, plus Odell Beckham, who had 96 catches for 1,450 yards and 13 touchdowns. The Giants didn't have a guy like that. They had nothing at wide receiver. I mean, they were trotting out there Richie James, trotting out come November, Isaiah Hodgins off the practice squad, Darius Slayton, a fifth-round pick who can kind of be up and down. The Giants didn't have it. Daniel Jones, who pretty much looked like he was on his way out, so much so that they didn't even want to bother picking up his fifth-year extension, and they're paying for it now, of course, because they're paying him more money. And if you remember that 2015 team, to go back to what McAdoo inherited, they were 6-10, and I looked up their Pythagorean win total, and it was 7.5 wins to 8.5 losses, so they underachieved by that metric. And if you are the Giant fan that I am, you remember 2015 was the year that you literally wanted to take a sledgehammer and break windows, because they had frustrating losses to the Cowboys due to a poor clock management situation by Tom Coughlin. They lost a 52-49 shootout where Eli had 6 touchdowns to the Saints. They choked away a game to the Patriots where they dropped what would have been a game-sealing interception. They lost to the Jets in overtime. They had a game against the Panthers in that Josh Norman, Odell Beckham game where they came back from 3 touchdowns but still blew it. So that year you really, you know, you wanted to destroy things, quite frankly, if you were a Giant fan. And in 2016, again, the last time they had made the playoffs prior to this year, they signed big-time free agents. That was able to take them over the top. They bring in a Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. They bring in an Olivier Vernon to rush the quarterback. They bring in Snacks Harrison, who was an all-pro during his tenure with the Giants. But the 2022 team, you know, they didn't do that. They didn't go on some type of free agent spending spree. They had $40 million of dead cap, cleaning up Gettleman's mess. And Gettleman, I've talked about him ad nauseum. Guy who just, he's a good scout. He can pick good players here and there, but not a guy you want running your team. And you had Kenny Golladay, who was, you know, not necessarily dead cap by the true definition, but he was a $20 million against the cap, basically doing absolutely nothing. So I say all this because it highlights that Daboll is a heck of a coach, that he took that team that was pretty much devoid of any type of talent, and essentially he's working with dollar store ingredients, and he's cooking a dinner that's Morton Steakhouse quality. Not the best steakhouse in the world, but real solid. No one's complaining about going into Morton's and eating at the steakhouse there. So that's what Daboll was able to do. And in 2016, and this is what this team needs to do this year going forward, that they did in 2016, they went 3-1 against the Eagles and the Cowboys. And I know that the Eagles were in the first year in the Carson Wentz experience, but this team, the Giants, to get over the hump, to continue what you built last year, you have to go beat the Eagles. There is no more losing 2 games to the Eagles. There is no more losing 2 games to the Cowboys if you want to have success. It starts and ends right there. You have to play well against these teams. You have to have it out for blood against them. You're opening against the Cowboys Sunday night. You got to leave it all out there on the field. Not that they're not doing that, but that's where your season is going to be decided. You can't have Cooper Rush come into MetLife Stadium as a backup quarterback and beat you. You know, and if you want to show that you're playing with the big boys, you have to beat those 2 teams. Now, more introspective on Daboll, because I could, you know, I could talk all day about the fact that you need to beat the Cowboys and the Eagles, because 1-4-1 is not good enough in the division. But on Daboll, the moment that I knew this guy was the coach of the team, a coach that I'd be satisfied, was in the game against the Texans, all right? And this is a play no one will ever think of again in the history of their life. Jack Anderson, who was an offensive lineman who lined up as an eligible receiver, you know, a tight end spot, they were looking to run heavy that game, the Giants. So they go with the unbalanced line. And the Giants had the ball at it was either the 31 or the 36 of the Texans. And Jack Anderson lines up as an eligible tight end, and he commits a false start on 4th-and-1. And the Giants end up punting instead of being able to continue the drive because they're out of field goal range. So they cut to the sideline, the cameras, and Daboll is just absolutely destroying him. And I could just see in his face that he's like, we have a game plan put in here because the Texans can't stop us running the ball. And you're over here not knowing the snap count. And he wanted to rip the guy's head off, but there was no, you know, back talk because, yeah, Anderson was wrong, obviously. But you could just see that Daboll was like, I have a plan. My team might be devoid of talent, but the Texans cannot stop Saquon Barkley and his rushing attack. And I think Barkley had over 30 carries in that game, if I remember. So again, this is a random moment, but this is showing me that he's capable of holding the guys accountable. And I know Jack Anderson's a no one. I don't even know if he's on the team this year. It's not so much about him, but Daboll showed he can keep the guys accountable and that he's got a game plan and he's comfortable sticking with it and he's comfortable sticking with within a game, but then also from game to game, something that he learned from his mentor and guy he worked for, and Bill Belichick, changing it up based on what you think you can do well, but getting so upset to the point where if you get in the way of his game plan, he's going to chew you out. And the thing about Daniel Jones, because I don't think I've talked about him enough here in this Giants segment, is that the way he played in the Vikings playoff game, and even the Vikings regular season game too, that's what we need to see. Because it can't just be about him running. And it can't just be about him not making mistakes and keeping the training wheels on him. Because if you want to beat the Eagles and you want to beat the Cowboys, which is the key to this team doing, you know, not going under 7.5, like I said, that's what it's going to take. It's going to take being able to throw the ball down the field. All right, and I know they drafted Jalin Hyatt. I know they hope Wandell Robinson comes back. He's got to use those targets. He's got to find the ball down the field. And quite frankly, I need Kayvon Thibodeau to show me more. I just went through all these pass rushers. And I know, me especially, it's not all about the numbers. It's not just about sacks. Sacks are kind of the byproduct of putting pressure on them. But he's got to get me more than 4 sacks. And I understand he had a real big impact play in that Commanders game in D.C. where he had the triple play where he stripped the ball, recovered it, and took it in for a touchdown. So that was a huge play in the season for the Giants. That pretty much put him in the playoffs, if you think about it. But he's got to step up big in these Eagle and Cowboy games that I talk about. He's got to go get me 10 or 11 sacks this year if he's healthy. I think when you have Dexter Lawrence also in there, this is a guy who's a big defensive tackle, 340 pounds, but you can keep him on the field during pass rush. He's an excellent pass rusher from the inside. Again, I think he had 7.5 sacks, and especially for an interior player, that's unbelievable. But if you watch the games, you see he's in there pressuring. So that's what they need to continue on. Those two guys continuing with the pass rush, and also Azeez Ojulari, who had 5.5 sacks in 7 games last year. With better health, I need 10 out of him as well. Because if you get those sacks and you can contain Jalen Hurts, you can contain Dak Prescott from taking off and running when it's 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, no one's open and they tuck the ball, you got a real chance to win some games. But what keeps me up at night as a Giant fan, someone who wants to see this team do well, because again, this is not, you know, me talking as an unbiased observer, and this is the Giants segment. This is, you know, Mike in East Rockaway, Mike in Scottsdale, Arizona, now Mike in Philly calling up WFAN to break down the New York Football Giants. What keeps me up at night about this team is I need to see Jones push the ball down the field. I need to see this team beat the Cowboys, beat the Eagles, and I need to see the pass rush make big plays, much like Thibodeau did in that Commanders game. Again, I'm picking under 7.5 from the, you know, truly unbiased pick for this team. But I'm rooting for the opposite way. That'll be one where I'm glad to say, you know, keep the ticket. I'm not going to go up to the counter and get my money back. So, Schloss rant. Football starting tomorrow. Giants Sunday night. I couldn't be more excited. Everyone's got their fantasy. Everyone's got their picks. I'm thinking about following, maybe doing 5 picks a week, seeing how we do. That's what they do in that Circa Millions competition. I'm going to see if we can start my own with that, actually entering it and give out 5 a week. We'll have to see what direction we take the podcast in. All right, Schloss Rant live from the Philadelphia suburbs, 10:15 at night here. That alarm's going to go off soon, about 6.5-7 hours to go do my morning workout. So we're going to jump off now. Enjoy the game tomorrow night. Enjoy Sunday. Hopefully you get that YouTube TV all organized. Make sure you purchase that Sunday ticket so you can watch not only Red Zone, but stream all the games, all your out-of-market games. This is not an ad. Sloss Rant Live, Philadelphia Suburbs. We'll see you later, everyone.